Well, it's graduation Sunday. Every year we stop and we appreciate the graduates, specifically those who have finished their high school experience. It's a sad time for them, but it's also a time of rejoicing. I remember the summer between the time I graduated from high school and went off to college. It was the oddest summer of my life. It just was weird. Recognizing that my fall would be unlike anything that I had done for the last 13 years of my life. And anticipating what college would be like and the freedoms that it would bring. And recognizing that some of those friends that I had just parted company with, threw my little cap in the air and said goodbye to, there were some of those friends that I would not see for years, maybe ever again. It just was an odd summer for me. And yet I also remember it being a summer of liberation in the sense that I recognized that there were big things on the horizon. Everything that I had been doing up to this point in my life was pointing to this moment, to where I would grow my own wings, as it were, and I'd start my own flight. And although I was several years yet before I would fully leave my mom and dad's home, I recognized that decisions were quickly coming down that were falling on my shoulders particularly to take care of. And it was a daunting task for me. I chose this morning to look at a subject that is a challenging question. In many ways, it's a mystery that has caused a lot of division within Christianity itself. And I'm not so arrogant as to think that I could solve this in one short lesson, because it will be short given all the activities we have with potluck, etc. I do think that if I can throw some passages in front of you that you can take home and you can personally study on your own, you can begin to unravel this particular question. I posed it to my 14-year-old on the way to church this morning, and I posed it to my wife yesterday. I posed it online and got several responses. If God has foreknowledge, in other words, He can know ahead of time, does that mean then that everything He knows has to happen? You see, it's a very important question for us to answer, especially this graduation Sunday, because it has a lot to do with the future of Jordan and Jody, our two graduates. God knows where you will be 30 years from now. So what's the point? What impact can you have? If it's already foreknown, why would you and I believe that we could have any real free will in the process over the next 30 years? You see, it really does divide Christendom, I'm going to say down the middle, although numerically speaking, it's not down the middle. By far, the majority of individuals default to a particular opinion, and that is that because God foreknows, predestination has to mean that everything has been set out and you and I have little to do with the way things are organized in our future. I don't believe that that's the case, and I think that I can show you this morning from several passages why it's not the case. But there's one passage in particular that I find to be especially interesting with regards to this subject. In fact, my oldest son, Bryson, shared this with me several weeks ago, and as I have been looking at it and studying it and picking it apart, I began to realize that it's not the only passage in Scripture that shows God's intervention with humanity, yet allowing humanity the freedom to dictate their own future. And so to our two graduates this morning, as I chose this subject for this day, I would like for you to understand that though God knows your future and He has a great plan for your life, it does not have to be that way. And I'm convinced that's a biblical conclusion based upon this passage and two others that I will show you this morning. Let's read it together. I'll read it to you and I'll throw it up here on the board. I would rather you see it in your own personal Bibles. But from 1 Samuel chapter 23, beginning at verse 7 and following, you've got this story from the life of David. And it's an interesting story. David finds himself regularly wandering, running, as it were, from Saul, the king. And this is not unlike many of those other occasions in his life. From 1 Samuel 23, beginning at verse 7, it says this. And Saul was told that David had gone to Keilah. So Saul said, God has delivered him into my hand, for he has shut himself in by entering a town that has gates and bars. Saul assumes that by David going to this city, he's trapped himself. Aha, opportunity. Saul will attribute it to God. I'm not sure that's an accurate inference on his part. We'll see that in the future. But Saul finds this to be a great occasion. David and his men are trapped. I'm going to go get him. Continue reading. Then Saul called all the people together for war to go down to Keilah to besiege David and his men. Continue reading. You see in verse 9. When David knew that Saul plotted evil against him, he said to Abiathar the priest, "Bring the ephod here." Then David said, "O Lord God of Israel, your servant has certainly heard that Saul seeks to come to Keilah to destroy the city for my sake. Will the men of Keilah deliver me into his hand?" David asked. "Will Saul come down as your servant has heard? O Lord God of Israel, I pray, tell your servant." Interesting contrast. Saul makes an assumption. God obviously has trapped David in the city for me. I'm going to go get him. But it doesn't seem to indicate that Saul ever took the time to pray and actually ask that that is, or get confirmation that that is God's will. David, on the other hand, the man after God's own heart, he asked Abiathar to bring forth the ephod. He prays to God and he says, "God, here's the deal. I have heard. What will happen?" And so he's asking God to make a prediction about the future. And this is where it gets interesting. Notice the conclusion of our story. "And the Lord said to David," and the Lord said, "He will come down," meaning Saul is going to come to get you. "Then David said, okay, will the men of Keilah deliver me and my men into the hand of Saul?" So I need two predictions here, God. Number one, is he coming? Yeah, he's coming. Number two, when he comes, will they deliver me and my men into their hands? And notice what God says. "And the Lord said, they will deliver you." That's the message of God. That's the pre-directive of God. David asks, "Are they going to take my men, capture us, and deliver us into the hands of Saul? Is that going to happen?" God says, "That will happen." But notice the next verse. "So David and his men, about 600, arose and departed from Keilah." Now, I'm not going to take the time, but I would encourage you to go ahead and read the rest of the chapter. And by the way, he doesn't get captured. David does not stay in Keilah, and David is not captured, even though God said that he would be captured in Keilah. My question is this: how can God say to David in predicting the future, "Yes, Saul's coming. Yes, Saul will capture your men," and then allow David to say, "No, I will depart and those things won't happen"? How could that possibly be the case if God, in his predestination, in his pre-knowledge, in his pre-planning, how could this be possible unless there are variables to be had even within God's pre-plan? Clearly God says Saul's coming. Clearly God says that the people of Keilah are going to turn you over to Saul, and yet clearly that doesn't happen. How is it possible? I think there are three things, and you see them there on the right side of your screen, but I think there are three things that are irrefutable from this passage. Number one, God foreknew. Number two, God foretold what he foreknew. And number three, David had the opportunity, the privilege, if you will, to act upon what had been foreknown and foretold. And he does exactly the opposite of what has been foreknown and foretold. So is God a liar? Was God inconsistent? Did God speak something that was not true? I think, and there are better men than I in the room who could probably challenge me on this, but I think that this is a passage that would indicate to us that though God foreknows something, that which he foreknows does not necessarily have to occur in one vein, but will occur in another vein. Is it possible that God knew two options that were maybe many, many more? But is it possible that God understood and he knew? Yes, David, you stay in the city, and here in the city of Keilah, Saul will capture you. And he knew that that was a possibility. But he also knew that if David will pay attention to what I foresee in the future, there is another option. And that is the option that you could depart the city and you could continue to survive. And we know he does. He's going to go on to become the next king. Is that also an option that God could foresee? Yes. And I think he did. Notice that David asked God for a prediction about the future, not with regards to how could he escape, but will these things happen if I stay in the city? My question is, did God foreknow? Yes, God foreknew. But just because God knows in advance one option doesn't mean that he is trapped by that option. There are other options on the horizon as well, and God knows them too. Is God all-knowing? Absolutely. But he knows all of the options. You see, that's the point. And in knowing all of the options, he says to you, you get to choose. And so to the graduates this morning, may I say this. Unlike the entitlement culture that you live in, that would suggest to you that you are owed a future, that just by virtue of the fact that you were born in America, therefore you ought to be living in wealth and be able to prosper. That's not God's design for you specifically. God desires something of you. He has pre-planned something for you, but you get to choose. You get to go about the process of deciding who you will be in the future. Let me take you to two others. I've always felt, of course, this is put forth biblically speaking, that by the mouth of two or three witnesses, something will be established. And so I've always tried in my ministry to find at least three stories, passages that would substantiate a fact before I ran with that fact. And so allow me to give you two more. We've studied the first one. If God foreknows or pre-knows something, does everything that he pre-knows have to happen? Evidently not, and yet, yes, it does. God knows what's going to happen, but it doesn't necessarily mean that just because, in the case of David, that he says to him, you're going to be captured in the city, that that's the only option that God foreknows. And David opted for another foreknowledge, and that was to escape the city. But number two, if God predestines, this leads us to something that obviously is more circulated within Christendom today. If God predestines something, does that which he predestines have to happen? To predestine, obviously, is to choose a destination ahead of time. In Exodus chapter 32, and we'll not take the time, again, given the circumstances and the celebration we've got to follow, I'll not take the time to open there, although I would encourage you to study it on your own. In Exodus chapter 32, verses 10 through 14, Moses comes down the mountain. He finds his folks at the bottom of the mountain. They have taken all the jewelry. They've melted it down. They made it into a golden calf. And God is livid. He is completely upset. He is ready to destroy this people. In fact, that's what he desires to do. In Exodus chapter 32 and verse 10, it says this. God speaking. He says to Moses, now leave me alone so that my anger may burn against them and that I may destroy them. Then I will make you into a great nation. God has predestined. Moses has come down the mountain. He sees God's people doing all kinds of perverse idolatry in the presence of God himself. They're at the holy mountain of God himself. And there they are down there dancing around a golden calf. And God is mad. And he says to Moses, he says, go away from me. Give me some time because I'm going to let my fierce anger burn within me. And then I'm going to wipe them out. I'm so mad at these people. And then I will predestine. I will predestinate. I'm going to give a destination in advance. And you know what the destination is? Moses, you will be the one who brings about a great nation. Now that would not have violated the covenant of Abraham because we get Moses through Abraham. God could have done that. That was an option. He could have certainly made that choice. And it would have been a right choice. In fact, at this point, if you put a period in the story right here, this is the will of God. This is what he has determined. I am going to kill these people and I'm going to create a new group of people from Moses. That is his predestination. But my question is, does that happen? You know the end of the story. It does not. Moses goes to pleading and talking with God and he says to God, if you do this, what will the Egyptians think? What will all these nations around about think? And God in his infinite wisdom says, because of his love for Moses, all right, I will opt for option two. And option two, of course, is for him to forgive the people to some degree at least. He does hold them to responsible. But he is going to forgive the people and he's going to continue the lineage as we have it presently, not necessarily directly through Moses. And so I take you back again to the question. It's all going to tie into our graduates here in just a second. But I take you back to the question. If God predestines, he ahead of time determines a destination. Does that destination have to hold true in all cases? No, it doesn't. Because there is a good chance that there is another destination that is also pre-known by God, and it's up to you to choose the destination at which you will arrive. Number three. If God pre-plans something, does everything that he pre-plans happen? In Acts chapter 17, verses 26 through 27, it says in verse 26 that God marked out their appointed times on the timeline of humanity. God puts them in specific places. But then he says in verse 26, God did this so that they would seek him. You see what God did? He pre-planned ahead of time where you would fit into the human timeline. Why does he do that? So that you will seek him. Who determines whether or not you seek him? You do. That's up to God to give you the opportunity and for you to take advantage of it. So, in conclusion, God pre-knows and he predestines. He pre-plans your life. But you are in control. It's up to you to make the right choices. You probably can't read that if you're at the back, but I saw this post this week, and I thought it went well with our services this morning. A little girl who I've known for a long time posted this, and she's actually a bright young lady, and I suspect she hadn't processed through completely what this indicated with regards to her and her view of education. But this was posted, and I think it was supposed to have something to do with April Fool's Day. Fun prank, she says. Make people study for 16 years and then don't give them jobs. And I understand the discouragement of that. You got your 13 when you're in up to high school, and then at least three more, I suspect, is what she's trying to indicate here with regards to the post high school and getting you a college. Well, you know, here's a prank for you. Make them go to school for 16 years and then don't give them a job. And I understand that frustration, but understand the underlying thought of this frustration. It's in that last concept. And then don't what? Give them a job. That's socialism. It's not America. It is not our job to provide a job. And I love both of you very, very much. And I think all the educators in the room would agree with this. If not, perhaps we need to talk. But I think one of the areas that we have failed as far as the government infringing upon some of the wonderful teachers that we have represented in this room, it is this. Education is first about building character. And then somewhere down the line, it's about getting you a career. But we have got those things reversed. Somehow we've got it, this idea in our mind that if we can just test them enough or get enough stuff that they memorize and put it in their head, then somewhere along the line, then that's got to translate into getting a job. I would suggest to you, it's just the other way around. If we will build their character, make them good people, understand that they must function, they must be part of a good, growing, godly culture, they will get a job. They'll find a career. But we have reversed those so much in our culture that we have established an entitlement culture that would suggest that if I go through my high school experience and I come out the other side and I don't automatically have somebody give me a job, those teachers must have done something wrong. When it might very well be that my character was not built to the point that I recognize it's not up to the government to pay my bills. It's up to me to work hard so that I can be a functional part of a wonderful culture. Now let me conclude in this way. If God pre-knows where you will be 7 years from now, and he predestines it, he's got a destination for you to arrive at 7 years from now, and he even has a pre-planning that's in place, And you sit down and assume that you are entitled to all of those things just because you exist. Number one, you don't understand God. And number two, your life will self-destruct. I am convinced that when God said we were created in His nature, in His image, that one of the things He was saying is that just as I am creative, you are called to be creative. And so to Jordan, who we have watched grow up right here in this congregation, waddling around, little cute little thing, to grow into a gorgeous young woman. God's got big plans for you. I know it. And I'm excited to see it. And I'll be honest with you, I'm kind of preaching at the choir because I know how you are. I've watched you scrap and scrape on the ball court. I've seen you run up and down when you're totally outwinded and out of breath, and yet you pick yourself up and you keep on going. I know how you are. Up to this point, my dear, you have proven to me and everybody in this room that you have the potential to do everything God has pre-planned for you. But it's still up to you, dear. Jody, who most folks in the room don't know because he just moved here, but I've watched him grow. Your quiet nature, and yet your strong, unassuming presence at many of our MAP events. Going to Haiti was a big deal. I was impressed. I never thought I'd see you do that. I recognized when you made that leap that there is something inside of you that I hadn't recognized as being there, that you had a desire to just let God. And He did. And He will. But it's up to you to choose that. God is pre-planned. It's ready. It's set. The table is there. All you've got to do is move in and take over. He wants you to. But will you move in and take over? It's up to you. It's in your hands. What you going to do? I am convinced that every person in this room is predestined to spend eternity with God. That's what He wants. For God so loved the world. That's all of us. He doesn't want anyone to perish, but that all should come to repentance, all come to a knowledge of Him. That's a predestination that everybody in the room gets to go to heaven. That's what He wants. But it won't happen without you choosing to allow that option that He pre-knows to take place. So do you know Jesus? You remember years ago when you went into the water? Remember the commitment you made? It's still as vibrant today, or should be, as it was the moment you came out of that water. Serve Him. Choose Him. And I promise you, all that He has pre-planned will not only come true, but you will be a glowing example to all of us of just how powerful God can be in our lives. If you have not met Jesus, if you've not put Him on in the watery grave we call baptism, or you have and you've walked away from Him, understand that in both of those options, you have made choices. God has pre-planned something special for you. The question is, will you allow it to occur in your life?